98.1. My name's Mike Moody. You are listening to Star Trek Discovery Pod.
Woohoo!
We're going to talk about Star Trek Discovery?
Star Trek Discovery, Episode 14.
The War Without, The War Within. A very apt title. Also a very freshman literature class title. Or freshman creative writing one title.
It was the best of wars. It was the worst of wars, Mike.
Yeah. Who are you, sir?
This is Grant Davis. I am your... I don't know what rank I would be. First officer? Today I get to be first officer because no one else is here.
Yeah, yeah. It's just the two of us.
Yeah.
Are they still on that away
I'm
mission?
I'm still your red shirt.
You're not dead yet.
Captain Mike Moody and red shirt Grant Davis.
Red shirt Grant Davis. Ashley and Clyde are still on their away mission, as mm-hmm. we like to say.
Busy, busy bees.
Busy bees.
They're missing out because this was the penultimate episode.
Yes.
And it was super exciting.
It was pretty exciting. Well, not as exciting as last week.
Yes, I should temper my excitement there.
Calm yourself.
Yeah, because episode 13 was bug nuts crazy. And I find that like penultimate episodes go one of two ways. They either are what should be the finale, and then the final episode is sort of a, I'm going to butcher the word. Is it denouement? Denouement?
Denouement.
Denouement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I
think we both butchered it.
But whatever. I understand the meaning of it, so that's what I meant.
We're Americans, everybody.
But this one seemed to be the opposite approach that penultimates do, where it's the big setup for what is going to be an obvious, punchy, exciting, adventurous finale.
Yeah, we're heading to Kronos, and we might blow that place up. Which is crazy.
Gonna wreck some shit.
We're gonna wreck some shit. This was a very explainy episode.
Yeah.
Very explainy. We'll jump into it further in just a sec. Before we do that, I want to remind everybody listening to visit us at StarTrekPod.com. You can find links to our listing in Apple Podcast at StarTrekPod.com, Facebook, Twitter, Stitcher, all that stuff. Leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We would love that. That helps us out a lot, gives us more visibility. You can also help us out at patreon.com/StarTrekPod. You can do a $1 an episode donation there. You can do a $2 an episode donation. I think you can pay $5 too if you want. We'll take whatever you want to give us. But if you give us $2 and above an episode, you can join our private Slack channel called Lorca's Menagerie, where we discuss all things Star Trek Discovery. We even talk about the old Star Trek shows on there. And I want to give a shout out to everybody who's on the Slack channel. Appreciate you guys listening and donating. But yeah, if you want to do that, patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Okay, let's jump into this episode, episode 14. You know, I don't think there's been a bad episode of this show yet, or an episode I don't like.
Yeah, there's been some that I think are a little bit more, a little bit slower paced, or they're doing the setup. They're cramming in some character development or fleshing out a little bit more of the plot so that the subsequent episodes have the bigger punch.
So like we said before, this one was definitely all set up. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, mainly. I mean, there was some really great dramatic stuff. But okay, let's just jump into hot takes.
Hot takes.
Hot takes. Did you like it? Did you love it? What'd you feel?
I liked it. I think that this episode, you know, when I think about this episode, I like it. I like the setup that they're doing here, how we have brought Ash Tyler kind of back into the picture. And I think there's some interesting things with the Federation and how the rest of the crew kind of accept him back into the fold. I think the dynamic between the Admiral and Georgiou and Saru, all of that's pretty fascinating as well. But I'm also a little bit mixed because I think in the grander scheme of not only chapter two, but of all of season one, this episode is a little bit underwhelming. It's not one that I'm going to think back on as much as some of the other ones, because I don't feel there are too many bigger moments that like etch in my brain about this episode.
I agree. Yeah. Like we said, it was a lot of setup, but there was at least one moment that really clicked for me—an emotional moment between two characters—and I'm not talking about Ash.
You're talking about Tilly,
not necessarily Tilly. Although I did like that.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm talking about. Actually, I am talking about Ash, but not Ash and Burnham. Ash and Saru. Yeah, that scene early on when Saru decides that he is not going to imprison, Ash,
mm-hmm.
and he lets him walk around with a not an ankle bracelet, but you know, a eye watch or whatever.
Gives him a sweet ass eye watch.
Yeah.
Like, well, really? Do I get this for free? He's like, well, you have to make installments.
So he's walking around with that, but Saru basically tells him. In Saru, in that scene, what I saw was a picture of the great tolerance and empathy that we see a lot in previous Star Trek. You know, there is an understanding of you did something wrong. However, we think and we feel that you were not under your own control.
We're rooting for the best in you and the best in... I would say humanity, but these aren't all humans, I guess. In
humanoidity?
Humanoidity? Sure.
That'll work.
Because I'm not going to know the other word for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I sort of agree with that. I like that more optimistic look at that. But I watched that scene as well and thought, oh, Saru, you're being so naive.
I'm sure, like, a lot of people thought that.
Like, you don't understand fully what was going on with the biology. You don't know what Laurel did when she used her finger electric rays and zapped his brain, and whether or not Voke is fully gone. That guy is still potentially a liability on one of the most dangerous ships in the galaxy. Oh, nay. Multiple in the multiverse, one of the most dangerous ships, and you guys have an extreme liability in this guy, and for him to just kind of be like, yeah, I trust that Laurel like took care of it, and you know, the doctor couldn't find anything, but granted, the doctor couldn't find anything the first time, and that got Colbert killed.
Right.
So why are you being so trusting, Saru?
I'm not saying it makes a lot of sense.
Beautiful,
I'm saying
it's honorable.
I'm saying it's beautiful and honorable. It makes some kind of emotional sense for me, which I like.
But it's so naive to me. And I feel like Lorca wouldn't trust it.
Oh, no. Mm-mm.
No. Burnham, or not Burnham, Giorgio would just eat him. She wouldn't be dealing with it.
New Giorgio would definitely eat him. Yeah.
New Giorgio. Mm-hmm. You know, this episode was very interesting, I thought, for Giorgio.
Yeah.
But that first scene where why does she have a gun, by the way? Why did she still have a gun? Burnham should have neutralized that situation immediately. Like, we zap on the hair, I take your gun. Like, you're now with us. But she was the Emperor.
You know, and last week we talked about, okay, is this Giorgio going to be able to be rehabilitated in the Prime Universe? And if she is, the show is communicating to us that is going to be a long and hard road, because the first thing she does when she materializes on the Discovery is say, who the fuck is this Kelpian talking to me? She calls him a slave.
Laughs about how they eat Kelpians.
Right.
And then she pulls a gun on him.
She pulls a gun on him.
Like, not noticing the distinct power structure, like, dynamic has shifted here.
Right.
Yeah. And I think it's great because she maintains that throughout. She still walks with the air of an empress who demands a certain degree of respect. Like, there's a later scene where she's talking to, who is she talking to? Oh, she's talking to Sarek. And Sarek was like, I'm still unclear on why you requested my presence. And she said, no, you were summoned.
You're
here.
Summoned. I'm the Empress.
And that's such a big baller move on her part that she still sees herself as the Emperor, and everyone else, even in this other universe, must bend to her will.
And it's interesting because if they let her loose that way, she seems like she can really take over shit. Because you have that scene. Well, we get Cornwall.
The Cornballer.
Yeah.
Admiral Cornwall.
Cornholio.
Played by Jane Bruck.
Jane Bruck. She's so good. You get her, you know, she beams on to the Discovery with Sarek, and she immediately takes over the ship, right? And it was great to see her back. And I mention her because you get that dynamic between her and Giorgio, where she wants to show Giorgio respect and say, you were brought here against your will. You're not necessarily our prisoner. I will respect you, Your Highness, because we're all about tolerance and diversity here at Starfleet. But in the back of your mind, you know, what you said about Saru and Ash is also was scratching at me in that moment. I was like, she's going to fuck your shit up. Lock her up.
Yeah. It's just like you see this certain degree of strength within the Federation because they have this idealism. Mm-hmm. But that's also a complete vulnerability.
Right.
And that's why the Klingons are whooping their ass, because they're playing by the rules while Klingons are operating under complete guerrilla warfare tactics.
Mm-hmm.
And having such a predator in Georgiou now enter the Prime universe, she can like also see all the weaknesses of all these people, be like, that person's gonna give me a pass, that one's not going to anticipate this about me,
right?
And I could murder all of you guys.
Yeah,
I brought a gun on here and Burnham didn't even think to take it away from me. Mm. Right when we transported here,
I'm Benjamin Linus without the pretense.
Yes, it's Benjamin Linus.
Well, it's interesting, the war without, the war within. The war without, obviously, the war between the Federation and the Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
The war within, the Starfleet, the Discovery crew grappling over whether to move away from those principles in order to ensure their victory and survival. That's really what was going on here. Are we going to move away from tolerance, from non-guerrilla warfare, from a more dignified way of living and fighting a war in order to ensure our survival? Because Starfleet is backed into a corner here. The Klingons are massacring everybody. There's like thousands, like almost 100,000, you know, Federation or Starfleet members dead.
I thought it was pretty fascinating that the strength of the Klingon Empire comes not from their unity, but from the fact that they're factioned off into these 24
right.
Groups that are actually competing against each other. So there isn't a certain degree of predictability. There isn't a certain element of decorum within warfare. They are all acting out as aggressively as possible with no like central point of leadership. And it's just kind of chaos that has allowed them to reign over the Federation, who's like, well, we will operate by these principled standards. And we lost our one tool, which was going to allow us to win the war, the Discovery. Yeah.
So we were wondering whether they could make the show could make the Klingon War interesting at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a great idea. I think there was a cool twist to it that, you know, the Klingons together under one house, it's different. Like, it's complete guerrilla warfare. There's infighting, and the way they infight is to see who can destroy the most, which house can destroy the most. Like, it's nuts. Did you like this development? Because you were kind of like, I'm not sure about this Klingon War last week.
Yeah, the Klingon War, it was a little bit boring to me, I think, earlier on. And they kept trying to show the perspective of the Klingons in a way that I'm like, are we supposed to be sympathetic to them? Because right now I just see, like, a bunch of assholes kind of having a dick measuring contest. And then the Voke and Laurel storyline was this zealotry that I'm like, also, I'm not really gravitating toward this relationship and that whole dynamic. I think because Voke, you know, for as much as I love, is it Shazid?
Mm-hmm.
Is that his name?
Shazad Latif, I believe.
Shazad Latif.
Yeah.
I love his performance as Ash Tyler. If he was also the one playing Voke, which I think he was.
I think so.
I did not find his performance there as compelling.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's a lot better as a human. but yeah, I don't like how they operate. And I wasn't really wanting to see their perspective on the war. So jumping in here where the Klingons are winning, and we see that discussion between Admiral Cornwell and Laurel, where she's outlining, look, your team is winning, but they're winning in the most chaotic fashion, and I don't see any way for us to broker peace, to end this in any way that doesn't end with mass genocide. Like, they are just destroying my people, and I can't bargain with it at this point. Like, is there a way to do this? And Laurel's like, no. At this point, they're basically sharks in the water who smell blood.
Right.
They're going to destroy everything in their way, and the only thing you can do is to destroy them. But,
you know, that was another great scene with Cornwall kind of commanding that scene, because she's pretty much saying what a lot of us are thinking. Hey, you followed Takuvma. Guess what? Takuvma was full of shit. And Laurel is, it feels like Laurel is realizing this.
Takuma was kooky and believed in prophecies that were going to bring about stuff, and that wasn't true. Although, it could be interesting if the torchbearer, if Voke, that has now become the human in Ash Tyler, will somehow be the key to bringing them together to the table to negotiate peace.
I mean, we watch a lot of TV, we read a lot of stories, we're conditioned, at least I am, conditioned to think, okay, this is a penultimate episode of the season, we have this war, is the Federation going to chuck its ideals and blow up Kronos and do a terrible thing to win the war, or is something else going to happen? And my years of reading stories and watching TV makes me think, we have this very tortured Ash Tyler character who doesn't know where he belongs, who is the relationship that is deepest to him is fractured and could possibly never be repaired with Michael Burnham. So I don't know, Grant, do you think we're going to see something maybe as hacky as Ash Tyler somehow sacrificing himself for the greater good and that making everything okay in the, with the Klingon War? I don't know how that would work, but you think that's where we're going story-wise?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't. I think more from a business perspective that they like and they value the actor and what they can do more long-term with a character like Ash Tyler / Voke, even though Voke may no longer be there. But he might.
That
Saru, he might be there.
Okay, that stuff is confusing because even that scene where Saru is talking to Voke and talking about this compassion and tolerance for him, and the lovely scene where Tilly goes and eats with Ash Tyler in the mess hall, and then the crew realizes we need to show him some support.
Yeah.
Visually, emotionally, that worked for me. However, those two scenes would have clicked a little more if the details of who Ash is and how they made him Voke and what is actually happening with him were more clear. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like, sometimes in this show, they can be really heavy-handed. They can they can be like, look, audience, this is exactly how this is working. Other times, they'll just techno-babble and be like, look, mushrooms are transporting us places. Don't really think about it. It's happening. And like, this is one of the instances where it's like, I wish some scientist, or rather some doctor, had just pulled up a diagram and been like, look, I made you an easy-to-follow PowerPoint here. Future Star Trek PowerPoint.
Doc Brown on the chalkboard or something.
Like, here's the body. They cut out some shit and shrunk down this Klingon body into a human body. And then they took this little box here, and this is a fake little mind, and they Johnny Mnemonic'd it into him. And now he thinks he's also Ash Tyler.
Right.
Like, say that or something.
But even, like, I still don't understand what's happening. Are we meant to not understand what the process was for his transformation?
Yeah, because, like, did they take out Voke, but somehow Ash Tyler knows Klingon and can speak it, because he started like saying some Klingon terms and like he seems to have a memory about some stuff that I'm like, wouldn't that be Vox memory? I don't know what's going on.
I don't want to get too like stuck in the weeds on this position, but it is an issue. I think that stuff isn't clear. Maybe it'll become clear. Maybe it's not supposed to be clear for story reasons. Mm-hmm. But listeners, we would love to hear from you about that stuff. Tweet at us at Star Trek Pod. We know you have thoughts.
I want to jump back to Saru being captain.
Yeah, for 10 minutes, but a glorious 10 minutes.
I was so excited that he was captain. He comes in and, I mean, the figure of Doug Jones just commands a certain degree of respect. He's so tall and notable, I think, imposing in a way.
Yeah.
And yet, gentle, right?
He has his dignity about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, immediately, I see this guy, I can follow him. I respect it. And over the course of chapter one and most of chapter two here, he's earned that respect. The character's earned that respect from me. So him assuming the captain's seat and his approach to things all work for me. And I'm like, yes, I'm on board this.
Same.
And it was just neat to see everyone else calling him captain, giving him respect, until we see Georgiou, who just tries to like immediately dress him down. And I'm like, fucking Georgiou.
Yeah. After last week's episode, watching that felt really terrible. It's like, I don't want to see that happen to Saru.
And I get why they did that. They wanted to remind us that she sucks. Mm-hmm. She's a mean person, because I think after last episode, her bonding with Burnham and helping Burnham makes her a little bit more endearing to us. But for the purposes of where they wanted to end this episode with Georgiou assuming the captain's seat, they wanted to go, hey, just an audience reminder, she's mean and cruel and unnecessarily so.
Right.
And how she approaches Saru. But like how he just kind of takes that and like brushes it off and is just like, we're going to put you in a captain's seat. And then like hearing other people just call him captain,
mm-hmm.
except Tyler, because Tyler didn't know. I thought it was all kind of nice.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I really was excited about seeing him in the captain's chair and hopefully having him remain in the captain's chair. We even got that scene where Cornwall shows up at Starbase One and is so dumbstruck and emotionally overwhelmed when she realizes that the base has been decimated.
Yeah.
And she can't even make the command to jump out of there before they're attacked. And of course, Saru has to take over, showing that he has what it takes to be the captain.
That's so smart of the writers, too, mm-hmm. to get into the psychology of what's going on with the Federation, with Cornwall. Is it Cornwall? Cornwall? Do we decide here?
I think it's Cornwall.
Cornwall? Okay. To get into her psyche and everyone who's been actually in this war. They've been in this war for 9 months while our crew has not. And they've
right.
been beaten down by it. Their morale is shaken. They're seeing worlds and friends just gone and like having to continually absorb that. So to see her just kind of broken at that point and for our Discovery crew to not be, and so they can kind of jump in and like yeah. Saru can be like, look here, I'll issue the orders and let's jump and like take care of this. Like, it makes sense.
And the fact that it's actually Cornwell, and the fact that Cornwell and Sarek, you know, they're the face of the Federation that's been hanging out and losing this war for 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
And they're devastated. They're emotionally wrecked. Even Sarek, you kind of see it and feel it on him a little bit, even though he doesn't really show much emotion.
Yeah.
But not only was it great seeing that, having them be the face of that anxiety that the Federation is going through in this episode, but it was also really smart that the writers worked in that Georgiou would target them too for her darker plan. That she doesn't let anybody in Discovery know what's going on. Like, because her idea is...
She sees they're emotionally vulnerable.
Exactly, and she targets that.
Although Burnham's emotionally vulnerable, too. It feels like she tapped into these human emotions she's just been burying for her entire young life, and now it's just like she can't seem to hold on to stuff.
That's true. But the writers made this Georgiou sneaky enough to know that Burnham would not go for the idea of completely decimating Kronos.
Yeah.
Right. And so she pitches that idea to Sarek and to Cornwell, who have been pushed to the limits.
That's a great call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the writers also did something really smart in the beginning when they first bring on Cornwell and Sarek to take over the ship. They have them take over the ship, and to figure out what's going on, they just have Sarek run right over to Saru, put his hands on him, and just like download the information.
I love that.
And just for us, the audience, to not have to go through
a sigh of relief.
The sequence of explanation for them to just shortcut it like that. I was like, man, I appreciate that so much.
I was so thankful because there is a lot of exposition ahead of that point in this episode, and the fact that we didn't have to sit through exposition of things that we already know,
yeah,
it was so great. I was so happy.
Sarek just being this like perfect opportunity for them to go, whoop, we don't have to explain that.
Right.
Because like even before that, I was even being a little bit nitpicky when Burnham is talking to Saru mm-hmm. when he comes and picks her up with Georgiou, and he doesn't mention that they've jumped ahead 9 months in time. I'm like, does she know? Like, how would she know?
Yeah.
Was she immediately told right before that?
Right.
So I kept thinking about that. I'm like, you have to convey this information. And then Sarek just like putting his hands on there and like, that's a perfect way to do it.
So you brought up Tilly earlier. I thought that in that scene where she goes and sits with Ash Tyler, and we should talk more about Ash and Burnham in a second here, but
sure.
I think Tilly also embodied the Federation's ideals of optimism and idealism more than anybody at that point. And then later on when she's talking to Burnham, when Burnham just flat out refuses to have anything to do with Ash Tyler in this episode, it's Tilly who convinces her to give him a second chance. And it feels, and I forgot exactly what the exchange was, but it felt like Burnham was literally saying, Tilly, you're the next generation. You're the ones that are going to pull us through these troubled times with dignity and with idealism and optimism. It was almost like Tilly, this episode was telling us Tilly kind of embodies the spirit of Star Trek more than anybody to me.
Tilly was saying, you got to fight the darkness. We got to fight, the darkness within us.
Exactly.
Which sounds like a sweet song from
Metallica.
Metallica. Fight the darkness within
us. Oh, yeah, yeah. Darkness inside me.
And then she's just saying, like, Tyler needs you, and how we treat others is what we become.
Yes.
Which I'm like, okay, this is all pretty good. But I feel like also, on the one hand, Tilly's being a good friend and, like, really looking out for both Burnham and Tyler, but Burnham also is going through some other crazy emotional shit right now.
A lot.
And for Tilly to just be like, give that dude who just tried to choke you out another chance. Just go in there and chat with him and be like, shit, I just got done saving all of us. Can I have a fucking minute to breathe? And like, no, like, look, it's been 15 minutes. Since you tried to kill you, can you at least go and forgive him?
And I think that was Ash's stance too, wasn't it? It's like, come on, I've already beaten myself about the. I've beaten myself up about this already. Can you just forgive me?
The biggest understatement ever was when Ash Tyler starts talking to Burnham, and he says, "Look, you want to bail on this relationship simply because things got complicated? Like, no, things did not just get complicated. You can't just chalk it up to that. It's not a Facebook status here.
Yeah, you didn't just find out you're like second cousins.
Yeah, yeah. No, she found out that you were a Manchurian candidate for the evil other empire that's trying to destroy humanity.
And then he's like, is this because Klingons totally killed your parents?
I know, like all of it. Like, there's a couple things that didn't work for me in this episode, okay. And I thought the argument between Burnham and Tyler didn't work.
It felt pretty flat for me emotionally, actually.
Yeah, because I felt like the dialogue he was given, what he had to say, his point of view, didn't jive for me with how he should be feeling. And this was also reflected in the interaction between him and Stamets. Earlier, I didn't really like the hallway scene where he has to kind of apologize to Stamets, and Stamets has to, like, say, do you feel bad? At least there's, like, some humanity in you, and push past him.
Maybe you're still human after all.
Yeah. Or whatever he said there. Yeah. I didn't like that either, because this all seems to be, like, we did not get enough of Tyler, like, dealing with what's going on with him.
We got pretty much zero of that. I mean, we see it on his face, but it's not really in the script.
Yeah, you were mentioning this earlier, but yeah, Tyler has not had to grapple with his demons appropriately, I feel like. And the same thing goes for Stamets, which is why I felt that fell a little short.
Right.
We didn't see Stamets get to properly grieve for Culbert. We didn't get to see him discuss it with anyone else or like what he's going through. Instead, he's just kind of walking around, maybe numb about it. But to have us, the audience, watch this scene and not get to have some background of him like traumatized by that incident or anything.
Yeah.
The whole thing fell flat.
I had an expectation in that scene of Ash running into Stamets. I had an expectation there that we would see something really difficult to watch. Right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what, but I was excited because I knew that confrontation was going to happen eventually. And then it started to happen in this episode. I'm like, oh, what's going to happen here? Are we going to finally see the depth of pain that Stamets is holding back because he lost Culbert recently? And are we going to see the confusion and depth of pain that and regret that
Tyler's going through?
And how is that going to play?
Right.
But it just... It didn't. There was no real drama there,
and I think both actors are great.
They are,
but it was a disservice in the plot because those elements should have been threaded through earlier. Maybe in that episode that was only 38 minutes.
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like throw in a couple scenes there that have us getting
a little bit more of the characters having to deal with that, because otherwise this emotional buildup isn't there.
We mentioned Stamets.
Yeah.
I thought he had a, besides that scene, I thought for the second half of the episode, we got a pretty good Stamets showcase. Like, he scienced the shit out of this plan, this crazy plan where they want to jump to Kronos, and they need to identify some specific military targets in order to cripple the Klingon Empire in order to gain an advantage in the war. That all makes sense. What I liked about this was the twist that they have to jump inside the planet because it's cavernous, but they're not sure how to do that, so they have to map it out, right? And then to do that, they have to grow more spores. So Stamets comes up with this great science-y, crazy, Star Trek-y idea of, let's just spore bomb this one moon.
Let's rapid fire terraform it.
Yeah. I like the idea of, instead of dropping bombs, they dropped, you know, this natural resource that they're going to not only use to win the war, but also bring life to this dead moon.
It's a great contrast to the idea that they're going to murder a planet of, right, of Klingons,
right,
that they're bringing life to another whole planet.
100%. That's what this episode was all about, you know? It was all about, are we going to win the day with human or humanoid innovation and idealism, or are we just going to, you know, blow up a planet and shoot people in the head?
Yeah, the scene of the terraforming of the planet was exciting. I imagine NASA gets a big old chubby about that. They're gonna be like, yeah, look at this terraforming. That's what we want to do. But also, like, how fast do mushrooms grow? That was like immediate. And I was like, what? Wait.
Well, they kind of like Star Trek bullshitted that a little bit.
That's what I figured. I'm like, okay, we're just getting a little bit of some sci-fi bullshit going on.
They did. Yeah. Like, there's a couple of scenes before Stamets pulls out the tube with the super spore. And he's like, oh, this is a super spore. And
I've included some Instagrow in here.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't worry about what Instagrow is. It just works. Instagrow. TM.
TM.
I'm like, sure, okay, fine.
But I like Stamets getting that hero moment.
Yeah, that was pretty spiffy.
So Michael Burnham was constantly beating herself up in this episode. Like, last episode, there was so much going on, but she was kind of the beating heart of it all, and I love following her through it. But in this episode, every time I saw her, I was like, oh, okay, we're going to be kind of down in the dumps right now. It's not going to be fun with her. I think, again, Sonequa Martin-Green's doing great, you know, bringing us into that character's emotional life here. But it was just a place I didn't want to be. It's a penultimate episode. I guess I want to be in a more action-y, driving forward kind of mood. And she was kind of bringing things down for me.
This is another matter of, I think, inconsistency in how they write the character, because sometimes she is our lead protagonist and the driving force of not only action, but like positivity and like the ideals that we're kind of striving for. Like, she's the one championing a lot of this stuff. But then other times she has to kind of play the everyman who is either grappling with stuff that the rest of us get, or like asking questions. I'm like, well, you are like one of the smartest people in the room. Why are you the person asking this question? Like, I didn't get her going, well, why can't we just hold on to the Discovery, to Cornwall, when Cornwall's like, look, we got to take your ship and we got to hide this away and classify it forever. This is dangerous.
Right.
Like, of all people, Burnham should have immediately got that. But I think it's sometimes that the writers are like, well, we can have her just kind of shift because she's constantly struggling with her identity. And is she, emotional? Is she rational? Whatever.
So the scene that did work for me with her was between her and Sarek when they're saying goodbye.
Mm.
So at first I was like, okay, it's a time of war. Sarek, what's the actor's name who plays Sarek? Guy from True Blood.
Frayne.
James Frayne, yeah. I think he does a great job. This is like my favorite Sarek. There's been like three or four actors who play Sarek.
And oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's the best one. Because he, I mean, not to say anything bad about Mark Lenard, who did an amazing job throughout the original series, TNG, and some of the movies. Mark Lenard's actually great. But Sarek, this guy's doing a different twist, because you really do see some vulnerability and emotions coming through his face, his physical gestures, his eyes. That scene with Burnham when he's saying goodbye, at first I was like, okay, it's a time of war. The idea here is he might not see her again because so much death and destruction is going on in the universe. But then I thought about the secret that he's keeping from her, the deal they made with Georgiou, because Georgiou has a deadlier plan for these Klingons. She has a plan to completely ruin Kronos, to maybe blow it up or decimate it.
Yeah.
Where the Discovery just wants to shoot out a few targets. Mm-hmm. And he's going to enact his plan, and Sarek's the guy who goes and sells it to Starfleet. So I think once Burnham figures that out, that's going to create a huge divide between him and Sarek. And I think that's why he was saying, good, you know, this might be a final goodbye.
Yeah, between her and Sarek. Mm-hmm. I think, though, there was a pretty beautiful scene, though, where he seems to like give her some fatherly advice. And it seems so counter to the Vulcan worldview of, like, you know, primacy of rationale. But he says to her, do not regret loving someone.
Yeah.
In her relationship with Tyler. And it just seemed like an uncharacteristic moment for him to look at how she's broken, she's devastated. I mean, like, when we're talking about Burnham here, and I think it's easy when you're episode to episode to kind of forget the larger scope of, like, the emotional, crazy, fucked up roller coaster that she's been on in this past few episodes. The arc that she's gone on and how she must actually be physically and emotionally just drained. She's dealing with all these assaults that on so many fronts. She is feeling the guilt of betraying the entire Federation. She is now brought on and she finds a pseudo father figure in Lorca who betrays her. She has to confront a doppelganger of Georgiou, her other mother figure, who is the worst possible version. And she has to go, like, underground and, like, help save her ship by doing some terrible things. And she doesn't even get, like, a chance to cope. So I thought that, like, I don't know whether it was implying that, like, Sarek could, like, intuit that she needed this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But him saying that seemed a bit like a character growth on his part and very valuable for her as well to hear.
It was a nice character growth. I like that we're getting character growth in even the peripheral characters like Sarek.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we saw that happen in this episode. We've seen it happen in previous episodes, like the one where he was kidnapped. That was really good.
We also got some more Spock hands between them.
Spock hands?
I don't know. Is it the Vulcan hello? The Vulcan salute? No, it's a Vulcan hello because that was the first episode.
Right. Now it's the salute. Yeah.
The Vulcan salute?
I think it's just a salute. Uh-oh.
Spock hands. I call it Spock
hands. Spock hands, yeah.
You can let me have this one. You know, speaking of me...
Vulcan salute, yeah.
I didn't say Klingon hands.
That's true. You do mess those up. You
but I did want to point out that Klingons, now I know this, live on volcanic planets. They live in volcano holes.
Yeah.
I feel like Klingons living with volcanoes is an easy way for me to confuse volcanoes, Vulcans, and Klingons again.
I thought that exact same thing when they said that, because I don't think we've ever talked about in Star Trek about the terrain of Kronos. But we do know that the Vulcan home planet is full of volcanoes as well. So what the fuck?
They all live in volcanoes.
I was like, man, this is going to confuse Grant.
Yeah. But Burnham seems to be embracing her humanity a lot more. The fact that she cares enough about Georgiou that she rescued this version. And she's talking to Saru and she's like, yeah, I could lie to you and say that I think she might be a valuable asset, or that we should try and hold on to her to keep her from being murdered in the other universe. But honestly, I just, you know, I had this emotional connection. I cared enough. Yeah. I want to save her.
Right.
And I think they've done a pretty good job throughout this season of taking where we were first introduced to Burnham and how she's like, I'm repressing all my emotions and, you know, what's prime is what I was raised on, the Vulcan way. And
her embracing her humanity. And I think they've done a pretty solid job throughout this.
I think so, too. And also with the character growth of Sarek, he is appreciating the human aspects of her more than ever, it seems like. Yeah. And he's kind of telling her, hey, that's okay. That's who you are. When before, it seems like she was never good enough.
So I had a question for you. There was a scene where they were talking about how they couldn't use the mycelium network to jump to the base where they wanted to classify the ship. And because they couldn't do that, they were going to have to travel across light years of space to this Starbase 1 via warp drive. And they're like, if we do that, we're going to be vulnerable. And I didn't know, I don't know if you know particulars of this, but zapping through space, like, why is that? For me, I think, like, oh, if you're going at warp speed, no one can detect you, but somehow they're more vulnerable?
I think the idea was that with a spore drive, they could jump in and jump out really quickly and do some damage and get out of there. They could really target where they were going.
But here they have to go and cut right through that space?
Yeah, and I don't think they can maneuver.
They can't warp in like a circle, like an outer edge?
It's a plot device, Grant. What can I tell you? They can't maneuver as quickly as they would with a spore drive. So
I'm being nitpicky.
So they're vulnerable. Yeah, you are.
I tend to do that.
Now, I want to ask you, the scene at the end, the surprise scene. I wrote down all caps, oh shit. Georgiou walks on the bridge. They call her captain. She's going to chart their course. Cornwell, Sarek, everybody's lying to the crew, except, of course, Saru and Burnham and that one transporter guy.
Yeah, they all have to pretend that this is the same Georgiou.
They have to pretend this is the same Georgiou. That had some really cool, like, in the moment, like, shock impact when I was watching it. But then when you think about it a little bit, it kind of falls apart. Like, okay, this doesn't. This doesn't make sense. I don't know. How'd you feel about that?
I thought it was a pretty good twist for the episode. And I feel like as long as it was not our Discovery crew that was making the choice, because they seem to be a little bit more familiar with how powerful and how potentially dangerous Georgiou is, that decision being out of their hands made it a little bit more believable that the course of action that Sarek's influence and Cornwell's influence with the rest of the Federation would allow for her to assume power. And I liked that in the very beginning of this season, we were discussing Lorca in regards to him being a wartime captain. And how fascinating this was, because up until this point, there's been this ideal of the captain being kind and compassionate and putting values
like Saru.
Yeah, putting the values of humanity and compassion and ethics above all else in their pursuits of everything. But you know, sometimes in war, you got to make these rough decisions. So Lorca, being a different kind of captain, not your daddy's captain kind of thing, being this bad boy was fascinating to us. Mm-hmm. But then we realized he was only that way because he was the mirror universe. That type of personality that sits in the captain's seat still has to be good and pure. And then us having Georgiou, when we know the type of person she is from even the little that we got to see of her as the Empress in the Mirror Universe, I feel puts a very fascinating twist on that, because like, oh, do you guys really want that war captain? Because we're going to give you one here.
Right.
But now I think you have the proper frame of mind to respect how the Federation was operating and why she is so dangerous and
okay.
volatile.
Yeah. If I think about it now, you've convinced me. It works for me a little better. I will say it worked for you, though, better than for me, because I do still feel it felt pretty unbelievable. It felt almost like a hollow twist, because they could have just kept her in that room and get all the intel from her that way. But, of course, she did have her demands, right? And I guess maybe her demand was, I lead this.
Well, I think that her being in the captain's seat, being able to make those dastardly executive decisions
is, in the moment.
Yeah, in the moment is them kind of turning a blind eye and saying, we are desperate at this point. And I think the best way to save humanity is to embrace someone who doesn't show what we think is humanity.
Right.
Just because you will drop an atomic bomb or whatever it takes to put a stop to this, I guess.
Yeah. It is definitely bringing that idea to the forefront, you know, the idea of the war within.
But is it going to be worth it? I mean, this is why I'm kind of thinking, like, with this being the penultimate, we got one more episode in this season. I'm not sure where they're going to go next season, but are they going to end this season with that war and how they make the decision? I that's what I'd imagine. We're going to have Burnham be confronted, just like in the premiere, with this decision of, do we use force and kill a bunch because we can win the day early and decisively, or do we appeal to our higher ideals?
Right.
And she made the first decision in the beginning, and now she's going to be confronted with a similar quandary and realize that she's grown as a person and recognizes that, no, we're not going to commit genocide on this entire planet. We're not going to play by the ruthless ideas, the Vulcan hello,
right,
just to win the day.
Well, whatever's going to happen, we're definitely going to see Michael Burnham again put in the most impossible, heart-wrenching situation, because that's what this show loves to do. It loves to get the knife, stick it in her heart, twist it a few times, and make her bleed. That is one consistency in this show that is sometimes inconsistent in its characters and storytelling.
Burnham's got it rough.
She's got it rough. But I also think that part of the solution to this Klingon war is going to be about uniting the Klingon houses. Because there was lots of talk about this in this episode. And while all that talk could possibly be just that it's crazy that this is how they're attacking and doing these, this is why the motivation for this guerrilla-type warfare. Even in the previous episodes, we've talked, our characters have talked about how the rift between the Klingon houses makes the Klingon Empire extremely unstable and dangerous. So I think uniting those houses or getting what T'Kuvma actually wanted, uniting the whole planet under one house and having, you know, one kind of government instead of all these houses that are in flux and at war with each other, that's what he was aiming for. So somehow I think we're going to get there, and it might have something to do with Laurel and Ash.
I wonder about the scale of this war, and this is coming from a person, mind you, listeners, who doesn't know a lot of the greater Star Trek lore. I don't know the other franchises too well, but the scale of this war, how destructive it has been, and that the Federation is on the brink of extinction. Do you feel like that fits to the rest of the franchise, or do you think we are in some alternate timeline version of how this war is playing out? Because we recognize, and we've discussed this a little bit on our Slack channel with some of the listeners, but we're dealing with a plot device in the time travel mechanics available now within the Discovery Spore Drive that make this reality questionable.
You know, a lot of it does not line up with canon, because we do see the end of the Klingon conflict in one of the Star Trek movies, and it just doesn't seem like what's going on here lines up with that.
Okay.
But that doesn't bother me too much. And the idea that, or the question of, are we in the actual Prime universe that we've been seeing in most of Star Trek in the past 50 some odd years? Yes, we are, because the writers keep tweeting that out, that stop asking us.
It's the Prime Universe.
Stop, please stop. And even the main, there's a Star Trek writer Twitter, Star Trek writer's room Twitter. Mm-hmm. They tweeted that out today. Like, please, we're in the Prime Universe. It's fine. And then the actual StarTrek.com account retweeted that and kind of said, we've answered this so many times, please stop. So I don't know.
Well, then I guess the other, because I'm like, okay,
it could be that the war is so devastating that when they do finally resolve this, there's a much tinier Federation and they have to re-embark on like discovering the rest of the universe. And so we jump with the USS Enterprise.
I think that's where we're going.
And like they had 80,000 people on Starbase 1 and that was just eviscerated. They had these whole planets like going down and just... like millions upon millions of people across the galaxy.
We're going to have to rebuild.
Dying, so they're rebuilding, right?
We're going to have to rebuild and launching the Enterprise on a 5-year mission to go out and explore. That actually lines up pretty well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So you don't feel like they might retreat back to time travel to erase what has happened?
I don't think so. I hope not. I really hope not. What happened, happened, Grant.
Right? That's kind of how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. So we're running a little long, so either we'll do listener comments next week or maybe we'll do a special episode after the finale. We'll see what we have time for. But only one more episode, Grant.
I'm pretty excited.
This has been a pretty damn... This series has really exceeded my expectations.
I agree. I didn't know fully what to make of Star Trek, and I thought, oh, it'd be fun to kind of jump in and watch the show a bit. And if I get tired, maybe I'll just have to bail. But no, I've been fully engrossed in this. This is one of my favorite shows to come out of last year and continue into this year. And every single week, not only am I watching this because we're going to talk about it in an hour afterwards, but I'm excited to watch it. I think the arc that they've done, the way they have respected certain elements of the world that's been built beforehand and the franchise and yet carried it into a more modern television narrative, it's been pretty impressive.
Agreed. And listener, like Grant said, we start talking about the show on the podcast probably about an hour after we finish watching the episode. So if we don't go as deep as you like or if we miss a few things, hey, give us a break. We're only human. We're not Q. So you can find us online at StarTrekPod.com. If you have more to add to the conversation, just click on that Twitter link at StarTrekPod.com. Click on that Facebook link. Leave us a comment. Also, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Spotify now, too. And support us at Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Leave a buck an episode. $2 an episode gets you into our private Slack channel, where we pretty much talk about this show all damn day. So it's fun. Grant, anything else you need to say about this episode before we jump into the finale next week?
I made a note on here.
Uh-oh.
I was thinking about Georgiou and how she's great. She's a very great, fascinating character to me. Evil and menacing, powerful and ambitious. And I wrote, she would definitely be a Slytherin. So this is where I landed on with her.
And Star Wars references for you this week, but a Harry Potter reference.
Yeah,
that's fine.
It started leading me down this thought train of like, who would be grouped into what houses on this show? So hey, if you guys want to sign up on patreon.com/StarTrekPod, become a $2 donor, guys, and come chat with us about who's in what house.
My God. Georgiou's a Sith.
We actually lost patrons because of that
part. Bye, guys. Sorry. Sorry. All right. Where can people find you online, Grant?
You guys can check me out over at Baron Von Grant on Twitter. And if you check out my little info, my bio on there, you can see all the other podcasts I do.
You can find me at Mike Moody on Twitter. Find us at Star Trek Pod on Twitter. And if you want to get to know us better, download our back catalog at StarTrekPod.com. We're getting close to the end of the first season. We're so happy you guys are joining us. And we look forward to talking about the season finale with you next week. Till then, live long and prosper.